Slavery is far from being a thing of the past. 27 million adults and children are still in bondage worldwide, and their work contributes $13 billion to the global economy. Kevin Bales is the president of an organization called Free the Slaves and the author of a book that offers a blueprint for eradicating forced labor wherever it exists. His book, Ending Slavery, How We Free Today's Slaves, is published by the University of California Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Kevin Bales to the show today. Hello.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So what does slavery look like in 2007?
Well, you know, slavery today looks a great deal like slavery in the past in that—
You mean people are picking cotton?
And certainly in some parts of the world they are. I can think of three different countries where I know people are enslaved picking cotton. But in addition, people are completely controlled by another person. Violence is used to maintain that control. They're not paid a cent beyond food and shelter, perhaps, and they're being economically exploited.
And are they enslaved for life, or does most slavery take the form of indentured servitude?
Well, indentured servitude is actually more like a contract that people get when they, say, join the army. I mean, that's actually very close to indentured servitude. No, it's much more along the line of being in real slavery. But it tends to be more temporary in time these days for a particular reason.
Can money sometimes exchange hands? Because I've read that some people consider sweatshop workers to be slaves.
Some people do feel that way, but I have to say we work to a much more narrow definition that says that if you are paid a salary, and particularly if you can walk away, even into a worse situation, then you're not a slave.
Are men and women equally likely to become slaves?
It depends a lot on the context, the culture, and the society. But of course, around the world, women are more vulnerable than men and children more vulnerable than adults, and that vulnerability leads them towards slavery.
What portion of the slave population are children?
I don't know. No one knows the answer to that question. It's a significant proportion, but we don't know.
Is slavery on the rise worldwide?
You know, we don't know the answer to that either. I can tell you.
Because so much of this is just secret stuff.
Well, it's a hidden criminal activity. There's a law against it in every country. But I can say that since about 1950, there's been a very dramatic increase linked to the population explosion. But whether or not it's increasing at this moment, again, no one knows.
Because the if the price is going down because there are more people available, then that would affect the lives of these slaves.
It does, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head when you say the price is going down. We've had an absolute collapse in the price of human beings around the world. Throughout most of human history, the price of a slave has averaged around $40,000 in today's money. And today, the average price is around
$100. $100?
That's right.
And that's often with two prices, isn't it? In some cases, a person is sold into slavery to somebody who's a middle person who then sells it to somebody else.
Yes, that happens. And sometimes they're sold many times. And on the other hand, there's a great number, millions of people in slavery today who are in hereditary forms of slavery and who've been born into slavery.
This despite the fact that slavery is illegal?
In every single country.
Every single country. That means that a lot of people just look the other way.
Corruption, governmental and police corruption, is the most powerful predictor of whether or not you'll have large amounts of slavery in the country.
How wide is the range of work that slaves are forced to do?
Well, almost every job that's dirty, dangerous, demeaning, and profitable, you'll find slaves in it. Things at the bottom of the economic ladder, so agricultural work and subsistence and very dangerous quarrying and factory work. But it's also true that you'll find all kinds of inventive things that criminals have done with slave labor. Right here in Manhattan, you may remember the case of the deaf Mexicans who were enslaved to sell pens and trinkets on the street, isolated by their disability and not discovered for quite some time.
And we often hear about people who have been imported to serve as house servants, but they are, in effect, slaves.
Well, they are enslaved. Domestic enslavement is the second largest type of enslavement in the United States.
And what is the largest? Sexual slavery?
Sexual slavery, which accounts for just under half of, as best we understand it, of people who are victims of human trafficking in the U.S.
How do they get trapped into being slaves?
You know, they get trapped into it by doing just what you or I would do in their circumstances. They're usually offered what sounds like a decent job and a set of opportunities that they don't want to pass up because they have kids and family members that they want to support and create a better life and provide opportunity themselves. and they step into that situation, and sometimes even pay their way into that situation of being enslaved.
In some cases, don't families actually sell their children into slavery?
You know, there are many people in the West who use that term, sell their children, but everywhere I've gone around the world, I find not that situation. What I find is parents facing a devil's choice, where if their children stay home, they're likely to be very hungry, possibly starve, possibly become ill through malnutrition. And then someone offers them a chance of saying, I can give your child a chance to work, a chance at education. I'll provide a safe context. And the parents have to make this horrible choice about letting their children go, perhaps to survive. And, of course, when there's trickery involved, it means that that child ends up enslaved.
So should I assume that the source of slaves is really poor countries or poor communities?
Well, the majority of slaves are coming from the poorest countries. And that population explosion, in fact, that fact that we've all heard, that 1 billion people in the world live on $1 a day, that is a huge new pool of potentially enslavable people.
And how does it work? Well, you said in some cases people are sold, for whatever, however we want to describe it. In other cases, people are looking for work. They pay some agent to help them get work and then discover that they are now trapped into
a slave situation. Yeah, not so much paying an agent. I mean, I've heard from on many continents from many people who have come out of slavery, people who come to slavery anew today. Very often start when someone rolls into their neighborhood, village, whatever, and stands in the back of a pickup truck and says, who needs work? I have jobs. Who needs a job? And they look at them and they say, that guy looks a little dodgy to me. On the other hand, my kids are sick and I've got to get money for this medicine, so I'm going to take the chance. And 100 miles later or whatever, they find themselves in a situation of total violent control.
What about those things that we see in the movies where somebody is offered a job in show business and then discovers she's actually going to work as a prostitute?
It happens all the time.
And you say that those people are bought now for $100?
Well, certainly in the poorer parts of the world where the majority of slaves live, the acquisition costs of bringing someone into slavery can easily be $100 or less. In the Ivory Coast a few years ago, after we had discovered slavery and cocoa production there, we sent one of our colleagues with a hidden camera into a local market and bought two very healthy young male agricultural workers from Mali for $40 each.
There are people who argue that when you buy slaves to free them, you're actually just working, you're encouraging more slave trade because they'll just get other people, and you've just been part of the kind of transaction that they thrive on.
Well, I agree with that. To my mind, buying a slave their freedom is like buying a television from a burglar, you know, trying to get it back that way. That's not the way we believe that people should come to freedom. We would only do that in the situation if there was, say, a child who is under immediate risk or threat to their life. Would we ever buy anyone out of slavery?
My guest is Kevin Bales, who's written a book called Ending Slavery, How We Free Today's Slaves. He is the president of an organization called Free the Slaves. His book, by the way, is published by the University of California Press. And we will continue our conversation after this.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're back with Kevin Bales, who has written a book called Ending Slavery, How We Free Today's Slaves. It is published by the University of California Press, and it follows a previous book called Disposable People. I mentioned earlier that the price of slaves is going down, and I wonder if that means that makes them more disposable.
It absolutely does. Slaves today are so inexpensive that there's absolutely no reason for slaveholders to worry about maintenance, control, care, keeping people alive for a long time. But it's also the case that because slaves are so inexpensive that the profit margins have just gone through the roof. So you can make your money back on a slave very quickly.
If you ask people where slavery is probably thrives the most, I'm sure that they'll say things like Saudi Arabia or Sudan. But are those the countries that are the worst for slavery?
Well, not for the largest numbers. The absolute largest numbers exist in South Asia, India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh. there's a very large number of slaves there, probably in the 10 to 15 million range.
Now, we're talking separate from, in India, separate from untouchables who do much of the really terrible dirty work?
That's right, except for the fact that being an untouchable, being a Dalit in India is a very, creates a situation of vulnerability that's likely to lead you into a situation of enslavement. So many more of the slaves in India are, in fact, untouchables or members of those what are called scheduled tribes, those people who actually fall off the bottom of the caste system.
Is slavery found around the United States?
Oh, yes. There's tens of thousands of people in slavery in the United States, spread across the whole country, but concentrated around the edges, around the coastal areas.
What about the Marianas? Has the slavery there been eliminated since it was revealed in the Jack Abramoff scandal?
We certainly know that it's if it's not eliminated, it's decreased to the point where it's almost invisible. People now have, and there have been government-mandated inspection systems set up. So we're feeling pretty confident that things are much better in the Marianas.
But why would slavery even occur in the United States? Is it because there's no way of detecting it, or because people do look the other way? You talked about corruption earlier.
It's not so much about corruption and looking the other way. It's really about not being able to recognize it when you see it. Because law enforcement is reasonably effective in the United States, people keep it hidden. So agricultural workers, sometimes sweatshop workers, and, of course, domestic servants are hidden away in people's houses. In some ways, there's no place more secretive than the suburbs.
What effect does slavery have on the global economy?
Interestingly, today, the effect on the economy is nil. It's almost there's almost no effect whatsoever.
You mean despite the fact that so many of the products that would come out of slave labor would be less expensive?
Well, they probably wouldn't. And the reason is because the amount of slavery in any product, well, any slavery is too much in any product, but the amount of slavery in any product is in the low single digits. So cocoa, cotton, tantalum, steel, coffee, sugar, all of those products have slavery in them, but probably no more than 1 or 2%. So it presents a different set of problems about how you then remove a small fraction of slavery from a product.
Because you can't apply sanctions and
use
the usual pressures.
Indeed. I mean, if you have a 100 farmers growing cocoa, but only two of them are in fact using slave labor, if you mount a boycott, you clobber those 98 farmers who are just trying to do their best.
How did you come to found Free the Slaves?
Well, Free the Slaves is actually the American sister or extension of a group called Anti-Slavery International in Britain, and I came over from Britain to set it up. You actually know about Anti-Slavery International, even though you may not think so, because it was the organization that began in 1787 as the very first human rights and very first anti-slavery organization. It's been operating continuously since then.
It took a long time for the organization to convince the British Parliament to actually outlaw the slave trade, didn't it?
It took 20 years. But in fact, I think that's a very short time. Remember that when they started in 1787, they were confronting an industry that historians say is the same size in relative terms as the global automotive industry is today. And if you and I were to sit here today and say, all right, let's start right now and bring the global automotive industry to an end, I think we might need more than 20 years.
You said that you don't believe in paying for a slave to free the slave. So how do you go about liberating them?
Well, there are a whole number of ways. You have to look for the ways that are appropriate to that form of enslavement in that context. But a lot of times it's about literally kicking in a door and reaching in and taking a person in slavery and hustling them out to a place of safety. Sometimes it's about bringing police into situations. Sometimes it's about setting up sting operations. And in many ways, it's also about affecting community change and political change that means that you don't have to do one-on-one rescues. But I think the key thing is also to remember that that point of liberation is only step one, that what we are absolutely determined to do is to never repeat the botched emancipation that occurred in this country in 1865.
We also have the problem of corruption, so you might call the police and say these people are being held as slaves and then actually not wind up liberating them but causing yourself some trouble.
Well, that happens around the world. And certainly, we have ongoing projects in northern India, for example, and We have to plan raids to liberate people, sometimes children, from the carpet industry. But we have to, by law, include the police in the process. But we also know that we can only bring them in at the last possible moment, or one of them will talk and blow it.
Well, once these people are freed, they probably are incredibly traumatized. How do you reintegrate them into society?
Well, that's a crucial part of the work. I mean, that's where we feel that freedom's really just the beginning. It depends on the needs. For those children, for example, we have residential schools where they go and they get medical treatment and psychological care and basic education and tons of food. You won't believe how hungry they are when they come out.
Do most people know they're slaves? I heard of a case in the American South where a woman had been held in slavery and her mother had been held in slavery, and she had no idea that there was any alternative.
It's certainly the case that those people in hereditary forms of slavery around the world find it very, very difficult to imagine any other life but the one that they have. I suppose that applies to a lot of us in some ways, but particularly in their case where their lives are totally under other people's control. And it's certainly those people who are in hereditary slavery that we spend a lot of time working with them even before liberation to help them to imagine what life and freedom can be like.
Most of these people are probably also illiterate or unable to get any information about
Yes.
the terribleness of their situation. But do you think that slavery is underreported in the mainstream media anyway?
Underreported? I think it could be. I mean, to me, of course, it's a crucial and maybe the most important human rights question of the day.
I mean, do you find the press receptive to
reasonably,
your message?
Reasonably so. And there's certainly been a very steep curve and increase in interest in media reporting in the last 5 or 10 years. But, of course, you know, the American media, this shows are very much an exception to that, has this high noise-to-content ratio. And it's hard to embed those little nuggets of information that can penetrate through that noise.
Kevin Bales' book is Ending Slavery, How We Free Today's Slaves, published by the University of California Press. So how do we free the slaves? You have a 6-point plan.
Well, in fact, in that book there's more than 6 points, but it's especially about the idea that there's no silver bullet. There's a whole box of silver bullets that are appropriate for different situations. So, for example, there's one set of solutions that work best with industry and the way industries can bring slavery out of their product chains, and that has to do with bringing together industries as a whole and linking them with human rights groups and consumer associations.
I have seen documentaries which have shown negotiations between American corporations and Chinese factory owners, for example, where screws are applied and they're told that they're going to have to produce the product for less than they have, even though the factory is already working at full capacity and people are very close to working in slavery. So doesn't it really start there with the people who are insisting on prices going lower and lower?
That's one of the most important points. But I have to say that in China and those factories that you're describing, there's a unique situation there where the Chinese government has converted their prison system into a factory system. And remember that these are prisoners who have not had the benefit of due process, sometimes even a charge or a trial. And it's fundamentally a slave factory system, which is used to bankroll the activities of the Chinese government.
Is that unique to China?
It's carried to its greatest extent in China. Some of the other countries, like Burma, operate equally slave-based systems for their own profit, but not anything as sophisticated as what goes on in China.
It would seem to me that eliminating extreme poverty would go a long way to ending the slave trade, but that seems almost impossible.
Well, in some ways, extreme poverty is a big challenge. But one of the things that we've learned in the last few years is the importance of how ending slavery helps to end poverty and how ending poverty helps to end slavery, that there's a cycle that can be introduced there. One of the things that we've watched is how villages where there's a lot of people in slavery, once they become free, the economy of those villages begins to spiral up very rapidly. Because people in slavery, it sounds a little odd to the American ear, are desperate to become consumers. But, I mean, they want to consume things that we take for granted, like 3 meals a day as opposed to one, and 3 sets of clothing as opposed to one, and schooling, especially for their children.
So how do you affect that kind of situation?
Well, we again see liberation as step one, not the end of the story. And all of our work
that means kicking down all those doors.
That's the first step, is kicking down those doors or helping people to come to freedom. But then we must follow that with basic education, ways to help people find new ways to make a living, helping them to build an economic autonomy and citizenship and a kind of dignity. Because, you know, in this country, in 1865, we dumped 4 million people into an economy without access to credit or capital formation, without political participation, no access to education. And we're still paying the price for that. We don't want to do that with the slaves of today.
What can we as individuals do to help fight slavery?
Well, certainly within the United States, it's very important to just learn a little bit about what a slave in an American neighborhood might look like, so that we won't have so many slaves hidden in the U.S., which we do. I mean, only a few hundred come out of slavery every year, and we estimate 30 to 40,000 in slavery. But the other thing interesting—
And is that good, compared to other countries?
No, it's not terribly good. It's better than some, but it's not nearly as good. Brazil makes us look pretty lame. In Brazil, the president's instituted a commission for the eradication of slavery, and that commission is overseeing work that brings 5,000 to 10,000 people out of slavery every year.
And that's a country that has its own problems with extreme poverty.
Absolutely. But otherwise, in many ways, the best thing an American can do is to help support those people overseas that kick in doors. I know we would all like to run out and rescue a slave child ourselves and have a dramatic Walt Disney moment with them, but it doesn't, you know, we don't fit in that situation. The good news is that we have lots of dedicated people who, in fact, are pretty inexpensive to support, who are ready to do that risky work of getting people out of slavery in the developing world.
Kevin Bale's latest book is Ending Slavery, How We Free Today's Slaves. He spells his name B-A-L-E-S. The book is published by the University of California Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been great, Leonard. Thank you.